got bars, prisons up, who got bail? A Trini gal addicted to retail. I tried to tell him I ain't nothing to fuck with. And talk a sheet, them niggas ain't about nothing. Them same niggas you run with. Be the same niggas to run quick when you dump it.
No way, you can't forget me, you can't replace me. Even when I'm not around, you gon' hear my name. When I'm not around, please don't try to claim.
We be mobbing, baby, all in your pockets. Yeah. You're looking for me, you can find me with them popping niggas. Yeah. Replace me, you must be off your rockers, mister. Yeah. My name in your mouth, I'm always head of topic with ya.
Oh, no, 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 no way. You can't replace me, you can't forget me. Even when I'm not around, you gon' hear my name. When I'm not around, please don't try to claim me.
My Christmases, jingle bells and jet skis, palm trees and loud weed, champagne and ocean breezes, beaches and boots. Sneaky niggas and snitches. You fiendin', get your fixes. Pedicure toes, nigga with a foot fetish. Fuck that social. Good morning text message. My favorite number is 777. Kiss me, baby, that's like 10 minutes in heaven. Bias matching Tim's, tatted your name. All my grim lesbian chick. Make sure she a femme.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener supported, non-commercial radio.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener supported, non-commercial radio. Featuring local and independent artists.
Impact Fourth Tuesday. Every fourth Tuesday at 1 p.m., meet people who are about making a difference in your community. Our programs are designed to be a catalyst that helps nonprofits and other community organizations get the word out to you and help them to reach their goals and potential in serving others. Listen to Impact every fourth Tuesday at 1 p.m. and see who is making a difference. The following is a pre-recorded program and does not necessarily reflect the views of WHFR staff members or Henry Ford College staff and members. This is Betty Daniels from Impact Fourth Tuesday, and I have a representative from the Voters Not Politician organization. And Katie, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and give us your role with Voters Not Politicians.
Hi, glad to be here. I am Katie Fahey. I am the founder and executive director of Voters Not Politicians, the organization heading up Prop 2 in this election.
All right. Now, Propositional 2, when I look it up on the, you know, do a little research, it covers a lot of territories. Why don't you kind of give us a background of how Proposal 2 came to be and what's your involvement with that? Maybe that can help us out a little bit.
Yeah. So Proposal 2 covers redistricting. When we go and vote, you obviously vote for your state senator, your state House member, your congressional member, but once every 10 years after the census, the lines for which communities get which representative actually change. Right now, those lines change by the people who are actually running in those elections, our elected officials, our politicians. It often happens behind closed doors with special interests and lobbyists and virtually no public input. And what happens when the politicians are getting to pick and choose whether they want you to be their voter or not is they often try and stack the deck for themselves and make it so that we have non-competitive elections or they can guarantee who's going to win.
Okay, go ahead. Now, I'm kind of like jumping in here. How did all this, now is that part of what we call gerrymandering, and how did it get to be such a prevalent, and why is it now to a point we need a proposal to address it? What's going on here?
Yeah, so that is called gerrymandering. Gerrymandering is when these district lines are drawn by politicians for their own benefit or for a political party's benefit.
Okay.
And it's actually been a term that's been around for a really long time. There's also racial gerrymandering, which is when people are trying to suppress minority votes. They're drawing the lines to try and make it harder for people to elect a person of color.
Mm-hmm.
And why it's getting so bad recently is there's just so much more data on us. Every website you go on, the credit card purchases you have, all of those little information points, we already know that political campaigns use that to try and target us and, you know, feed us custom ads. But all of that data is now being used to draw those lines, too. So they're literally going through, you know, one neighborhood and trying to guess, okay, these houses vote this way, these houses vote that way. I either want them because I like the way they vote or don't want them because I don't like the way they vote.
Okay. Now, I guess I'm trying to, you know, being like, put myself in the place of, you know, of the normal voter, and I guess I could say I'm the, whatever that means. Okay.
Yeah.
Why would that, if, you know, I'm just going to the polls, I hear see a proposal two. Why should I be so concerned about proposal two? And what is a yes, what is a, what does a yes vote do? What does a no vote do? So first, let's go about, you know, the person going to the poll.
Yeah.
Okay, what is proposal?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, the proposal two is really going to try and add accountability to our voting process again.
All right.
If you've ever felt like, you know, you really care about an issue, you feel like it's really popular, maybe something common sense like guaranteeing we have clean water, mm-hmm. or that our roads aren't filled with potholes,
mm-hmm.
and you wonder why those things don't happen right now, it really is because of gerrymandering. Gerrymandering has led to non-competitive elections in Michigan. It's also led to the way people voting not actually ending up with who is winning our election.
All right.
You know, we have a state where about 50% of the people vote for Democrats, about 50% of the people vote for Republicans. Yet, depending which party has gerrymandered the state, one party can have 70% of the seats. So they don't even need to compromise, even though the people of Michigan are voting one way.
Okay.
So and if you care about your vote and you care about it actually having an impact, your politician wanting to win that vote, we have to change this process so that the politicians aren't calculating, you know, how many, who they want their voters to be, because then they aren't accountable to us. They're accountable to the special interests and the lobbyists who are paying for them to run their election campaign.
Well,
but really, the whole reason we vote is so that we can, you know, elect people we like, but also unelect people that we don't like.
All right. So when did gerrymandering become a rule and not the, you know, the, you know, when did it become the norm and not an exception, I guess, is, or is it, you know, am I saying that right?
Yeah, it's a great question. Gerrymandering has actually been around since the beginning of our revolution. Elbridge Gerry, who was actually, he signed the Declaration of Independence and mm-hmm. was a vice president, but he was also the governor of Massachusetts. And when Massachusetts was getting redistricted, he was the one who approved the maps. And one of the maps looked so crazy that people said it looked like a salamander.
All right.
And because he was the governor, people ended up calling it a gerrymander. So the term comes back from way, way, way a long time ago. But the amount of data that now is on people makes it so that it's basically surgically precise. They're really getting in so that they're locking in 10 years worth of elections at a time, because these maps are only drawn once every 10 years, which makes it so that you really have non-changing seats, and the only thing that has changed them is whoever happened to win the election right before those lines were drawn.
So who applies to gerrymandering? You know, who, what, you know, what process, I well, let me stop, a bunch of questions come, let me slow down a little bit. Then gerrymandering or the application can change from election to elections, is that correct?
Yeah, so whichever political party happens to win that election, you know, this upcoming election is one of those elections, if they have the majority, even though it's only in one election cycle, then they really get to draw the line. So in Michigan, how it works is our legislature will have a committee with the majority party and draw up the lines and then shove it through for a vote, and then the governor gets a veto power or not. But, you know, if the governor vetoes it, then it goes to our Michigan Supreme Court, which is partisan, a lot of people think. So not every state, though, has politicians in charge of this. And actually, there's six states that have something like Proposal 2 suggests, which is a commission of citizens
mm-hmm.
who would draw these lines, where they're actually required to compromise, and they have Democrats, Republicans, independents, the third-party voters all at the same table.
All right.
They're doing it out in the open, unlike the status quo. And there's about 13 other states who also have some kind of combination of politicians and citizens. But Michigan's kind of especially corrupt, where we have the congressional seats, state House seats, and state Senate seats all being drawn by the people who are running in those seats, just by the politicians.
All
which
right.
also leads to a large incumbency problem. So if I'm in office, And let's say you're trying to run for my seat, but I am the one who is in office. If I can look up your address and where you live about 3 months before the election, I can draw you right out of the district. So you have to go run a race somewhere else, or I can run an attack ad against you saying that you don't even live in the district you're running for. And that's just, I think a lot of people see that as a conflict of interest and like it's not fair. That's why we have, you know, some people who keep getting elected and elected even though other people don't want them in office.
All right. Then, okay, so if I'm hearing you correctly again, then it might be used by one party one time, another party another time. Can it also be an individual type of thing? You know, and did I think that's what I just heard you say? Okay.
Yeah, so Democrats can do it, Republicans, but also, you know, even if one politician is the head of that committee and doesn't like somebody else, maybe they aren't, you know, they didn't do them a favor or something, you know, you have the same party trying to kick out other people in their party that they don't like working with.
Okay. All right. Okay. Then, so when I'm looking, you know, like I said, I'm looking at your website and stuff, and you have the different categories of proposal two addresses fairness, impartiality, and transparency. The fairness of proposal, all right, and what is the voters, not politicians, position on proposal two? What is your position, yes or no, for you?
Yes. Yeah, we definitely want it to pass. We actually took time to go out and survey thousands of people across Michigan and ask them, you know, do you like that politicians draw these lines or do you think there's a better way? And this constitutional language really has been written with thousands of people's input. And then we had to gather almost 500,000 signatures to even get it placed onto the ballot. And we really think that it's something that's for and by the people of the state that puts voters at the center of this and has it so that voters are choosing their politicians and stopping politicians being able to choose who they want their voters to be.
Okay. What people are there pros and cons to proposal two?
I think the only con would be that politicians no longer can rig the system, but depending on if you are a politician or not, I think is the only way that you can be against it. You know, they will be losing power, but in a lot of ways, they haven't been respecting that. Our politicians, there's been over 11 different bills adopted that have never been brought up for a vote trying to change the system, and it's only ever been adopted, you know, when Democrats have been in charge, then the Republicans are trying to bring a bill. When the Republicans are in charge, and the Democrats bring, it's clearly not in the politician's self-interest to give themselves less power, and that's exactly why it has to come from the people.
Okay.
And I think, you know, we're trying to really make it so that this process is focused on the things you mentioned, fairness, an impartial system where, again, the voters are put first, so that how the people in Michigan vote should be how we actually elect people. Mm-hmm. And then transparency is another huge part. No more behind the doors, closed doors sessions. Big problem with right now is there's a lawsuit that the League of Women Voters is bringing against the current set of maps. Mm-hmm. And there's emails coming out 8 years after these lines have been drawn where they are calling constituents, you know, garbage because they didn't vote the way that they wanted them to. And this commission will have to only be able to hold meetings. Every email will be made available as they're being written, which I think just adds more accountability into the system so that we're not finding out 8 years later.
All right. Now, proposal two, the yes vote, and it's carried. Then what happens after that? Go ahead.
Yeah. So then in 2020, when the census is being done, an application will actually be open for the citizens of Michigan to be able to apply to be on this commission.
Okay.
It'll be a 13-member commission with 4 Democrats, 4 Republicans, and then 5 people who are independent or third-party voters.
All right.
As long as you don't have a conflict of interest, if you're not a registered lobbyist or a elected partisan official or very closely related to them, then you'll be able to apply. There'll be a lottery to make sure that we have a diverse group of people who can listen to the people of the state. And that commission will have to go hold hearings across the state to listen to how people think that their community looks, saying, you know, I think that this neighborhood has a lot in common with this neighborhood and we'd like a representative together. Mm-hmm. And then the lines will be drawn. Mm-hmm. The commission will have to go back out, make sure everybody knows. Everybody will be able to publicly comment on it. Mm-hmm. They'll have to redraw the lines, most likely, because people will probably have a lot of feedback. And then those maps will be adopted for the 2022 election.
All right. I'm not trying to be redundant, and hope I'm just want to make sure I'm clearly understanding you. So, the proposal, the yes has and it has passed. Then they set up the commission. So anyone who is interested and there's not a conflict of interest can put their name. So are they voted upon? Are they appointed? How are these 13 people determined?
Yeah, you'll have to be a registered voter to apply, but that's the only criteria.
You apply.
And then it's a two-part lottery system. So the Secretary of State will make sure nobody was lying on their application so that everybody's qualified.
Okay.
And then they'll do a lottery to make sure that we have about 200 people. There'll be another kind of revision through the majority and minority leader in the State House and State Senate. So they'll be looking again to see, who maybe is too partisan to be serving on this.
All right.
And then there'll be a final lottery matching our, weighted for the statistics of our state so that you have a couple people from Wayne County, a couple people from the west side, the middle of the state, northern Michigan. You have different age ranges, different economic incomes on that commission to make sure it's really reflective like the people of the state.
All right. So I'm just trying to give a feedback and make sure I'm understanding this. So when they were setting up the commission, people will make an application and then it's like a lottery kind of thing. It's like people do. You pull names. All right. It's like first you had to people apply for the position. Then there is a vetting, if I'm using that word correctly.
Yeah.
All right. Yep. Of all the people whose names have applied, did I hear you say the minority leader or who pulls the names?
Majority and minority leader. Yep.
Okay.
Of the House and the Senate.
All right. So they take turns. Pulling each one gets so many pulls, is that kind of like an album, like a selector jury type of thing?
Yeah, exactly. They have some strikes. They can strike up to 10% of the applicant pool if they feel like they aren't qualified to serve.
All right. Okay. And then, there has to be a mix of Republicans, Democrats, and then five other people?
Yep. Independent or third party voters.
Okay. So are the people then in the poll in that group, they have to identify whether they're Democratic or Republican, is that correct?
Uh-huh.
All right. And then you also have people who say they are independent, yada, 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 correct?
Yep.
All right. And so then you have like three bowls, Democrat, Republicans, and nonpartisan.
Potter.
Okay. Right. Okay. All right. And then so... the majority leader gets to pull the most number, or how's it that, after you get the four and four from each party, who then gets the, determines that odd person out? Which person gets it?
No, that's all through the lottery. So actually no one person gets to choose who these people are. That's really because we don't really have an official who isn't partisan in Michigan.
That was my question. That was what I was trying to understand.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So it's almost like their names just drop down, like the lottery kind of goes, and their name drops down.
Yeah.
Okay. That is the random selection process. Okay. And the commission then will draft rules and guidelines will be already set up for them.
They have guidelines. They'll be able to do some operating guidelines, but how to draw the lines, there's things like equal population, respecting existing community boundaries, making sure that one party or person cannot be favored or disfavored based on a political stance.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll have to go and hold some meetings. And then actually a really important part too is that before any map can be adopted, you need at least two of those Democrats, two of the Republicans, and two of the independent or third party voters to all agree.
Uh-huh.
So we actually force compromise. But what you see in other states is that it's pretty easy. None of these commissioners are really there because they want to be. They want to be making sure that this is a process done with integrity instead of with the gerrymandering like happens right now. And so you get that compromise, and then they go out to the people and make sure that the voters in Michigan like it too.
All right. I guess now my next question is, what happened to the district courts? The district courts serve a certain amount of, certain district, a certain community, mayors serve. How much does this new commission reflect that that reality, I guess. You know, will this new committee...
Of the other types of districts in
Yes,
Michigan?
Yes.
Yeah, so they won't directly impact it, but if the community feels like that's a good standard, then out of the public hearings they hold, they can come and say that. So, for example, we have one school district in Michigan that currently has 6 different House members in it. And so, you know, and I think that's the West Bloomfield School District. So if the people who live there want to come to that commission and say, look, we don't want to have to go talk to 6 different people when we want to advocate for our school. We want a one, ideally, and here's how we would draw the lines. That's where that commission can take that into account.
Okay. What do you think is going to be the most, the learning curve for the voter if with this new commission? What's going to be his learning curve as to when this, as the commission starts to operate? How are they going to see the results of what this commission is doing for them?
Yeah, well, so in the constitutional language, we actually require that the commission has to give ample public notice about these meetings going on. Organizations like Voters Not Politicians, and I think a lot of other good governance groups in the state will also be making sure that people understand that they could go and show up to these meetings, or that they could even watch online or comment online. So the biggest thing is we want to make sure people can actually participate. We want it to be an easy thing to partake in. And so the language reflects that too, saying that they have to give at least 45 days notice before any meeting, make sure that they have a big enough space for as many people to attend, make sure that digitally people can attend. And that'll really probably be the biggest thing, because this is a process that right now has only been controlled by those already in power. So it'll be a brand new system, but it's a really exciting opportunity for us to, like, for once, to actually be involved in these lines that will dictate 10 years of elections at a time.
All right. So if I'm, then I'm hearing you correctly again, then the success or of this, the new commission, would be as to how much involvement the voters are in this commission. It's like, you know, at the public hearings, are they showing out? Are they, you know, making their voice heard? Is that what's going to be the grading of whether or not how effective the commission is or not?
Oh, no, I don't think so. Sorry, I misunderstood, I think.
No, it's a new question. It's a new question. Okay.
Oh, it's a new question. Okay. Yeah, you know, I think that this is really about changing the process.
Okay.
A lot of people are cynical about politics right now. They don't trust the political system. And we want to make sure that this is a process that has integrity, that will be fair, that will bring everybody to the table, to make it impartial, to letting one party, you know, benefit on the backs of another party. And we really want it to be transparent. And so I think if this is successful, it'll do that. But it will also lead to maps that reflect the will of the voters, when right now that isn't happening. You have, again, 50% of the people voting one way, 50% of the people voting another way, yet the representation is skewed, so that the things that a lot of us feel passionately about, the things we feel like are common sense, continue to not happen. So this commission will be successful if, you know, they have a fair, impartial, transparent system, and we lead to maps that actually reflect the will of the people.
All right. The maps are not written in stone, then, and they can change. Is that correct?
Once every 10 years, they'll change. Yeah. And there'll be a series of different voting that will happen before the maps are finalized, and that requires public input, too. So if people are following the commission along and they don't like what's happening, they can make comments and give suggestions, and the public can actually submit their own maps, too.
Oh, all right. Okay. Then, the commission, all right, so you have a new commission, and they're called commissioners, correct?
Yep.
All right. And their term in office would be for how long again?
Really through the, till the redistricting process is done. So it'll probably be around 2 years or a year and a half. But if there's any litigation on the maps, they'll be, you know, probably called back into it, but should be about from 2020 to 2022.
All right, and then there's a new, then a new lottery is set up, and you start all over again, correct?
Yeah, in 2030. Yep.
All right. What do you think the politicians' reactions are going to be to a yes on proposal 2?
So what's really funny is a lot of the politicians who are retired all think it's a great idea. I think they saw, you know, the corruption, and you get into office because you want to serve, but then you get in there and you see how political and partisan it is, to a degree where it's really minimizing how much the voters' voice is actually heard. And I think people in office, there's a decent amount of politicians who still think it's a good idea, but I think who also are a little nervous because they're very used to being able to be reelected that way.
All right. Then the commissioners will be accountable to who?
The voters. Because we're putting exactly how they have to draw those lines in this language, they are not allowed to draw the lines for any other reason besides what is stated in the constitutional, in the proposal.
All right. So then a lobby type organization or persons would not be able to have a control over the commissioners or what they do?
Yeah, they couldn't have control. They could go and give public testimony to talk about their personal community, but they're not allowed to directly be one of those commissioners. And then the commissioners have about 7 criteria they have to follow to make sure that these maps are drawn in a way that reflects the will of the people.
Okay, I think that's getting back to your transparency, that whatever the commissioners do, it has to be open for scrutiny. Is that correct?
Yep, yeah. And they actually, when they're adopting the maps, they have to actually kind of basically write an essay saying, you know, this is why we voted this way and this is how we think that they follow the criteria. And anybody who decides to vote no on whatever the final maps are will also be required to say why they're voting it. So if they think that something, you know, fishy is going on or whatever it may be, then they'll be able to have their voice heard too, and the public will be able to see that.
Okay. We're going to take a break right now and then we'll come right back, okay? So hold on.
All right, sounds good.
But before we take the break, I want you to give your telephone number out again, and after the break we'll do the same thing. So if people want to get in touch with you, how would they do that?
Yeah, it'll be proposal 2, and you want to vote yes. You can go to yeson2.com or votersnotpoliticians.com. Okay. We're also on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
All right, okay, and we'll be right back.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to mom, but a little over a year ago, we realized she couldn't take care of herself without our help. And, well, how could I not be there for her? I had no idea how hard it would be and just what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and, even for me, ways to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics that got me started, but also information about the hurdles I was facing in this new role. I could even connect with experts and hear from others who had been in my place. I know this road we're on isn't an easy one, but I'm really happy to have the extra help for her and for me. Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. This message is brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
All right, welcome back to Impact Fourth Tuesday. This is Betty Daniels, and we have Katie from Voters Not Politicians again. And we were discussing what a yes to proposal 2 would do for voters. Okay, Katie, again, give us your name and who you are and what you're about.
Yeah, hi, I'm Katie Fahey. I'm the founder and executive director of Voters Not Politicians. We are proposal 2 on the November 6th ballot, which is the anti-gerrymandering proposal, the proposal to instate an independent citizens redistricting commission.
All right. Now, does Voters Not Politicians, is that all you do as far as, you know, can you see yourself an watchdog organization, an advocacy organization? How would you define yourself?
Yeah, so actually, I'm only here because I accidentally started this. it was a little after Thanksgiving, it was a little before Thanksgiving, and I was thinking about going to Thanksgiving dinner. My family's kind of politically divided. There's lots of arguments.
Okay, and now talking about Thanksgiving, what year?
Yeah, 2016.
All right, go ahead.
Yep, and so, you know, I was thinking about that, and, you know, even though my family votes different ways, I think that we still have a lot in common. A lot of us do believe in fairness. We believe in wanting to see, you know, clean water and our roads fixed and a education system that supports students and teachers. And so I was trying to think about, you know, is there any way we can avoid those arguments? And I made a Facebook post, actually. I said, hey, I want to take on gerrymandering in Michigan. If you want to help, let me know, smiley face.
Mm-hmm.
I did not think it would lead to a constitutional amendment, but a lot of people apparently felt a really similar way, where they had remembered learning in school about gerrymandering and how, you know, it really doesn't put voters first, it puts politicians and lobbyists first.
Mm-hmm.
And a bunch of us wanted to work on that. And so that's where Voters Not Politicians started with. Our name stands for, you know, voters will draw the lines, not politicians.
All right.
And we'll continue, though, you know, if we win or if we lose, to be an advocacy organization to make sure that we can continue to add transparency and accountability to the redistricting process.
Okay. Why did you feel to start something new and not join with some of the pre-existing organizations that might have the similar concerns and issues?
Yeah, well, at first, you know, even when we started, we just started as a Facebook group, mm-hmm. and we did end up partnering with a lot of those groups who already existed. But a lot of these really great good government groups, they have a lot on their plate. They're fighting for a lot of different issues. Voting rights, redistricting could be one of them. You know, there's a lot of immigration things going on right now. And we, I think, as a group of people, wanted to just take on redistricting right now. And wanted a place where you didn't need a membership card, you didn't have to have been involved in politics before to be there, and just have another space where, you know, the regular voter could join.
All right.
And I think we found a really great partnership with a lot of those great good governance groups, though, who have endorsed, helped write the language, and been there the whole way.
Okay, am I hearing you say that you're working with the established party groups or established, what type of
not
group?
Not political parties, but kind of like the League of Women Voters, the NAACP, Common Cause, those organizations.
All right, okay. Who are you targeting more so than those other organizations? Because it seems like those organizations would be covering a lot of what you're doing. So what's the distinction?
Oh, yeah, no, we're trying to target the whole state of Michigan. We see whether you're a Democrat, Republican, Independent, that a lot of people really do want to, if we go back to the 2016 election, you know, from Donald Trump, a lot of people do want to drain the swamp. They want to see the establishment have some accountability, the political establishment, or Bernie Sanders, who had the political revolution piece,
mm-hmm.
or even, you know, Hillary Clinton with wanting to bring people together. We see that those were popular messages that resonated in Michigan, and that gerrymandering and getting a commission of citizens instead is one of those ways we can start adding that accountability back. It's not, you know, it won't fix everything, but it'll start creating a system that should lead to better results and politicians that reflect who the voters want.
How do you, what is your impression of how the voters lost control of the voting process, if I'm hearing you correctly, or not? Am I?
I think it's hard. It's, you know, the politicians in Michigan actually gave this power to themselves.
All right.
Used to have a commission that was bipartisan, and then our Michigan Supreme Court kicked it to the legislature because of some federal stuff that was going on, and said, you know, you guys can fix this so that we can continue to have it be bipartisan and for the citizens, or, you know, whatever you want to do. And the politicians actually decided, well, no, we think we want to draw those lines.
Okay. And then
it's hard to know what to do, too. I mean, what do you do when you know that there's corruption or there's, you know, a systemic reason that people are being disenfranchised? And thankfully, in Michigan, we have the constitutional amendment process where you can write constitutional language, gather 315,654 signatures in 180 days, then the people in Michigan can vote on this. But it does take a lot of people coming together to make that happen. Because, like, printing petitions alone costs $40,000.
Okay.
You know, it's hard to do.
Have you been in communication with other states where they have a similar concern, or are they addressing the issue differently? You know, what's your feed, you know?
Yeah.
What's give me another, I can't think of another state. I want to say Massachusetts, but I may be wrong. There were like six.
Yeah, well, actually for ballot initiatives this year, there's Missouri, Utah, Colorado, and Michigan, all are the ones with ballot initiatives. And then
there's
a bunch of states with lawsuits as well where they don't have the ballot initiative process. So like Wisconsin and Montana, Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and North Carolina don't have the ballot initiative process like we do, so they've been trying to challenge this in court.
Oh, okay. All right. So it depends on how the state set up. You know, each state has its own way of addressing gerrymandering, so depending on what the existing rules are, that determines how they will go about trying to challenge the process. Is that correct?
Yeah, or different states have different ways that people can enact laws. So in Michigan, we're actually really lucky because we do have a form of direct democracy where the people of the state can bring something on the ballot, But some states have it where only the legislature can. And what's unfortunate about that is, again, the legislature doesn't have a lot of incentive to give themselves less power in the system. They probably want to hold on to that control.
All right. What are the, okay, so when, you know, let's take the flip side. If Proposal 2 does not pass, then what would be the what do you see your responsibility then?
Yeah, so if this doesn't pass, the next set of lines are going to be redrawn in 2020. So we're going to want to make sure that we are still trying to probably do another ballot initiative. I really hope it does pass. but, you know, we've only got 2 more years before we can fix this, and 2020 will be cutting it very close if we wait until then. So we really need to pass it now. But it's too important to sit on the sidelines and just wait and hope somebody else fixes it. This is 10 years of elections at a time that are rigged, that are making it so that some people's votes count more and some people's votes count less. And that's leading to unaccountable government. And, you know, we have a lot of improvements.
Examples, some improvements that we need to make.
Yeah, I mean, I think seeing our test scores going down, our roads again, clean water is an issue across the state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a millennial, and seeing job opportunities here or even respect for a younger generation, I think a lot of that isn't improving no matter which party's in charge. And so I think that we have to really change the system of how people are elected.
Okay.
So we can hold them accountable.
All right. Do you think that there might be some infighting within the state, you know, different interest groups, different, you know, like the northern part of the state as opposed to the, you know, the industrial part of the state, you know, like the manufacturing was very much a part of Michigan, and now that's a, they are addressing with training and that type of thing. Do you see vested interests beginning to try to, you know, with a yes vote and the commissions that are established, do you see those type of groups trying to make impacts or trying to be set up their own lobbyists to get their way about doing things where you have this infighting?
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think actually the part of it's good to have representative democracy. I mean, we do have representatives for a reason so that they can take different parts of the state's interests into account. The Upper Peninsula District, Congressional District 1 representative should have different interests than downtown Detroit.
Okay.
Or Brenda Lawrence in the 14th. And that's okay, and that's good, and I think that this system will actually allow it so that more people's voices can keep it focused on that, saying, you know, here's how we describe our community so we can make sure that our interests are represented in Lansing and then in Washington. Because we have a pretty diverse state when it comes to industry, when it comes to people. And,
yes.
Yeah, how people make their livelihoods.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How will the commission be able to address those type of things? And I guess now I'm going to say, what's the difference between a commissioner and, say, a legislator?
Yeah, so the commissioner is just, their only job is to draw these lines.
Okay.
And to do it in a fair, impartial way, but based on criteria. And one of the criteria for drawing these lines actually is a criteria called, they have to take into account communities of interest. This is a standard that you see in about 23 other states. And basically it means those things we were just talking about, where an industry group, maybe even if there's a really high, a lot of churches in one area, or let's say it's school districts, the people of the community can actually go and talk to the commissioners and say, hey, here's how we define our community. Maybe, you know, 60% of us have our jobs in the auto industry, and we want to make sure that somebody's looking out for the auto industry in Lansing and in Washington. Those people can actually go and say that to the commission. Right now, that isn't taken into account at all. The only thing that's taken into account is whatever the politicians want to take into account, as well as existing community boundaries. But those are like county lines. And I think a lot of people look more at their city, their township, their school district. You know, when you go to find a place to live, what are the things you're looking at? Probably not necessarily what county it's in, but probably more like what are the jobs around there? What's the community like?
All right. Then that would, all right. So then therefore, let's say we have a population shift, okay, where millennials, okay, are, you know, those, the boomers have moved north and the millennials have moved south, okay?
Yeah.
So the commission then would, and then, okay, and economy changes because we're getting to now, you know, agriculture versus urban, and we know the commissioners then take all those and all those into consideration. Now, I remember...
That's why it's important the lines are redrawn once every 10 years off of the census, too, because of population shifts, economic shifts, and that's why those commissioners will have to travel the state to actually ask different parts of the state, you know, how have you seen this change? What's important to you? That kind of thing.
Okay. Then the commissioners then have an assignment to research and develop and then, you know, publicize how they came up with the maps that they're coming.
Uh-huh.
All right. Policy. All right. Are the guidelines as to how the commission will function, are those already drawn up, or is it something that's going to be?
Yeah. You can find them in the constitutional language, and most of them are going to be summarized on the ballot too. The only one that it leaves out is that this commission will have to respect the Voting Rights Act as well.
All right. Okay. If a person wanted to start doing their own research and stuff about Proposal 2, how would they go about that?
So if you go to votersnotpoliticians.com/solution, you can find it there. Even if you just go to votersnotpoliticians.com, I think it's the second tab. It says solution, and it actually has the language on there. We also, though, have a YouTube channel that has a great overview of the different parts of this policy. There's been some really great write-ups by the Brennan Center or a couple other organizations and news articles that highlight what this proposal really does.
Okay.
And you can go and read the language yourself if you'd like to.
Okay, now I want you to repeat that a little bit slower because some people are going to be saying, okay, I can go here, I can go there. So could you summarize that again and go a little bit slower so where people might begin to get more information for their own research and development in preparation for their vote on this proposal?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead again.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if everybody goes to votersnotpoliticians.com slash solution.
All right.
Or you can go to yesonto.com, and it's the same website, and you can click on the second tab, and that's where it talks about solutions. Or you can go and read the policy language, but... We also have a blog that does kind of a deep dive on these different elements that we've been talking about today.
And the blog is
we
who?
We also have a YouTube channel,
okay,
which is Voters Not Politicians.
All right. You were said that you had collaborated with some other organizations. What were some of those other organizations again?
Yeah, and you can find those too at votersnotpoliticians.com/endorsement.
Okay.
But organizations like the Sierra Club, NAACP, Common Cause, League of Women Voters, Brennan Center for Justice, many organizations like that.
Yes, I'm looking at it now, and there are, it's a large number, okay? A very, very large number, okay? Even some of the newspapers are, it looks like most of the newspapers, a majority of
Yeah, the Detroit Free Press had a really great article, I think it was about a week ago, that is nice and in-depth for people, too, if you want to go to why they're choosing to suggest that people vote yes.
Okay. And then you have the different organizations. Labor organizations are also there, and faith organizations that as community leaders. What community leaders would support this, and why do you think they do? I'm looking at community.
You know, I think that a lot of community leaders see that we aren't getting things done right now, and that our politicians are more focused on the politics of things than actually delivering results for the people of Michigan. They're much more accountable to special interests and lobbyists than actually making change for the people on the street. And I think that a lot of people who are community leaders are recognized that way because they actually get stuff done and they actually help make change in our communities. And unfortunately, we're not seeing a lot of that because our political system isn't set up in a way to deliver those results. But the really great thing is we have a chance to start correcting that. We have different faith leaders. We have some Indian tribe leaders. We have some community organizers from all across the state, too. Our organization has over 14,000 volunteers, and they're from all 83 counties of Michigan. So this really is a solution that's trying to look out for all the different parts of our state.
All right. Okay. Now, just to do another overview about Proposal 2, and voters, not politicians, are encouraging a yes vote on Proposal 2. All right. And your reason for summarizing again as to why you are saying yes for Proposal 2 is what?
Yeah. So I really think that we have a choice this November. Right now, we know that these lines are going to be drawn no matter what. But the current process makes it so that the only voices that are listened to are politicians and the special interests and lobbyists.
Mm-hmm.
It happens behind closed doors by people who don't want public input, and they really don't want people paying attention.
All right.
The Proposal 2 will bring this process out into the open. It'll make it so that Democrats, Republicans, and independents have to compromise and put the people of Michigan first in
All
a
right.
transparent process and an impartial process that should lead to a process that we can actually trust again, instead of having to, you know, be focused more on our elections being rigged.
Okay. And when the and the commission is determined how?
And the commission will be determined after the 2020 census.
Mm-hmm.
Registered Michigan voters, those with conflicts of interest, will be excluded from that but can still go give public testimony, and those are partisan politicians and registered lobbyists. And the commission will be through a lottery, really,
right.
to try and make it so that we have a commission that looks like the people of the state. Different
okay.
age ranges, economic income, should look like, you know, you and me and our neighbors.
Okay. And with a yes vote for Proposal 2, the commission will be start operating when and how? What would they be doing?
Yeah, a yes vote will make it so that the next time these lines are drawn, it is done fairly, and it will start, the application process will start in 2020.
Okay. And how do the commissioners, how will the voters be able to get know what the commission is doing, and how would they be able to get impact into that?
Yeah, so the Secretary of State will be the body that this is held in. That's the same place you get your driver's license or make sure that you're registered to vote.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually going to be required to advertise this and make sure that the applications are made available for people. And then there'll also be good organizations like Voters Not Politicians who will be wanting to make sure that you know how you can either apply or make sure your voice is heard at one of those community meetings.
Okay, and that was what I was going to say. There will be public hearings. And you were talking about the policy and guidelines. How often are will those hearings be held for people to make input into what's being done by the commission?
Yeah, so the commission will be selected by the end of 2020,
mm-hmm.
And then those commissioners are required to go and give at least, at minimum, 10 public hearings before they can even start drawing the maps across the state.
Okay.
And they'll have to do that, you know, the first half probably of 2021.
Okay, all right. So in other words, so the first thing they'll be doing is the public hearings will be first gathering information from the community and from voters as to what they deem as important to be considered in the establishing of the maps. And I think a key thing that the commissioner and the people want to understand is that the maps will be replacing the gerrymandering process. And is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it will actually be making it illegal to gerrymander. Right now, it's kind of hard to prove, and there aren't guidelines. We're kind of waiting for our federal Supreme Court to set out guidelines on that, but they haven't yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so this will actually make it so that Michigan is saying, we don't think it's right that people can be targeted based on if they vote for Democrats or Republicans, and make it so that their vote counts more or less. And the people of Michigan will be saying, you know, we're done with that, and now we're going to something that actually represents how people vote.
Okay, and so the power shift will go from who to who?
It will go from the politicians back to the voters.
Okay. Do you think the voters will be, is this a chance now for the voters to then begin to feel empowered?
Yeah, I do think so. I hope that it reduces voter apathy, because really your vote should hold more power than it right now does, because we should have more increased competitive elections. Right now we have almost no competitive elections, but it's not because the people of Michigan don't change their mind or don't feel more or less strong about different candidates. It's really because the politicians are trying to make it that way.
Okay.
We also, in states that have passed this, see people who are happier with their representatives because they have more incentive to go and listen to people instead of the lobbyists and special interests.
Okay.
And you often see younger and more diverse candidates getting into the political realm because the incumbents, the people who are already in office, can't protect their seat when these lines are being drawn.
Okay, very, very good. Well, Katie, thank you very much for sharing and discussing Proposal 2. And again, if people want to get in touch with you, how would they go about doing that again?
Yeah, so you can find us at votersnotpoliticians.com or yeson2.com. But also, we're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube.
Okay. Will you be holding any events within the next couple of weeks or so before the coming up to the elections?
Yeah, we have plenty, and we also have a really big need for volunteers to go spread the word, because this is a process that is, you know, a lot of people don't know about. Okay. Those can all be found on our Facebook page or on our website.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you again. And this is Betty Daniels from Impact Fourth Tuesday. Thanking Katie from Voters Not Politics.
This is WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists.
Fourth Tuesday, and in the studio I have three ladies who are representing the Dearborn and Dearborn Heights League of Women Voters. And I'm going, now there were some different proposals in the primary. How did you go about? And there were, and I understand, and my research, it looked like the league made recommendations to some of those proposals. How did you go about determining which, you know, what position you wanted to take on proposals and things like that?
Well, we have not taken position. Well, oh, that's not true. There are two voter-related ballot proposals that have been approved and will be on the ballot in November. One is Voters, Not Politicians,
right,
and the other is Promote the Vote.
Right.
We were not involved in the signature gathering for Voters, Not Politicians, but we wholeheartedly support the efforts, and that is the idea that instead of the legislature creating the districts for after the census, that it would be done by a citizens commission.
All right.
So we wholeheartedly support that. The one that the league was involved in from the very beginning is Promote the Vote.
All right.
And the other two big groups initially were ACLU and the NAACP.
All right.
So basically, this proposal would put into the Constitution, the Michigan Constitution, some basic voting rights. Some of them we already have through the legislature, such as straight ticket voting,
right,
privacy of your vote, and can't remember where the other one is. Oh, 45 days for military and overseas people to get their ballots.
Right.
But we want to put this in the Constitution so the legislature cannot take it away, such as they've tried to do with straight ticket voting.
Okay.
And I don't know if this would be the time to talk a little more about that. Okay, so the other new items in the Promote the Vote would be the automatic registration of people at the Secretary of State. So a person goes in today and maybe needs to get a new license, and they will be asked if they want to register to vote. And if they do, then the Secretary of State will take care of that, because they're working with the same system.
All right.
And kinds of information.
Right.
So with the new proposal, it would be automatically assumed that people would want to register to vote.
Right.
Unless the person says no.
All
so
right.
That should help with voter registration. Although Michigan, apparently, according to Ruth Johnson, our Secretary of State, is pretty high in voter registration, so we
okay.
can be proud of that.
All right.
The other one would allow people to register to vote. As I mentioned before, it's in Michigan, it's 30 days ahead. The new provision would allow people to vote or register to vote even up through Election Day.
All right.
up until the 15 days before Election Day, you could do it through the mail, but afterwards you would have to come in person either to the clerk or the Secretary of State, show a proof of ID. But this would help with people who sometimes come to vote and for some reason their name isn't on the poll book. And so if for some reason it's been deleted or, you know, accidentally, then they could go to the clerk's office and register to vote. And apparently that happens more times than we would know. The other big thing is being able to vote absentee without a reason. Now you have to actually give a reason, like
right.
being out of town or...
being over 50.
What is it?
Seniors.
Seniors, yes. Yeah, seniors. Yes. But this would be, you would not have to give a reason. So this, some people might call it early voting, because you could actually, after the ballots or the absentee ballots have gone out to people who have already requested them, anyone can go into this... could go into the clerk's office, ask for a ballot, fill it out, and turn it in. It won't get counted then, but
right.
you know, you've done it. So it makes it more convenient. And the whole idea is to make it easier, convenient for people to vote.
All right. Okay.
And the last item would be to make sure that our elections will be audited in a more formal way. And that will, we hope that will give people the confidence that their vote does count and maybe encourage more people to vote.
Okay, and if I'm understanding you correctly, all three of these things will be on the in November?
So there are two ballots that, I just discussed. One was Voters Not Politicians, and that's the commission for drawing the district lines.
Okay, and that's proposed. Yeah, and that proposal.
Political. But ours is Promote the Vote.
All right, okay. And those proposals, when they see it on the ballot, how would it be written?
I think Voters Not Politicians is number two.
Yes,
two,
that's ballot two. Proposal two.
All right.
And I'm not sure if ours was just certified a few days ago, so I'm not sure what number it'll be.
Okay, all right. But now, that's another interesting point. The voters' guides will then eventually reflect where that is, you know, be more.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, the voter guide gives you information about candidates and all propositions that are on the ballot.
Okay.
And anything that's on the ballot for you will show up when you put your individual address in. So that's
all right. Okay. Now, there, I also saw something about the redistricting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What is that? Can you help me understand that a little bit?
Yes, that's what Mary Jo was talking about, Proposition 2.
Okay.
And currently, our after the census, every 10 years, our legislators draw the maps.
All right.
And they can tend to draw them to their advantage. So this is a way
that
the citizens, a multi-partisan citizen committee, can then take information and draw the maps.
All right.
In a way that they all approve of, as opposed to.
Okay.
And so that would become, so that is Proposition 2. And getting back to the voter guides, a voter guide would say on a proposition what the proponents of Proposition 2 would say and what the opponents of Proposition 2 would say. And so you can kind of see which side you want to, you know, where you want to go, vote yes or no on.
Does the league get involved with having people to have a question and answers where, just like we were discussing here, I didn't get the clarification about the redistricting as well as the part of the proposal. And Mary Jo gave a very good history and development of that. Do you have forums or anything up to the lectures that people can attend, and how would they go about doing that?
Well, you know, actually, our state president and board has made it clear that they would expect all the local leagues to have something on looking at all the ballot proposals, because there's going to be some really important ones.
Yes.
And then secondly, to do what we call an advocacy meeting, where we would tell people why they would want to vote for the two ballot issues we just talked about. But in terms of the overall ballot issues, so the state has some speakers that are coming around, mostly board members, to different communities and explaining to the citizens the different ballot proposals. Judy Kerenchief, our president, speak about the proposals. And then we will also be having a forum for the Wayne County Judicial or Circuit Court candidates.
Right.
So that's exciting. And I just wanted to mention and put a plug in for another really wonderful organization called Citizens Research Council.
All right.
Right in Plymouth. And I get their emails, and they do wonderful reports, but they are going to be...
All right. How did you get involved? What does the League of Women Voters mean to you?
I grew up in Dallas, Texas,
and
I remember my mom teaching me about the League of Women Voters. Mm-hmm. And what she taught me about the League of Women Voters, and this is just from my mom, a person that I trust, was right. that the League was a place that she could trust for incredible information regarding voting, that it was kind of an institution that you learned about the candidates from, and they wouldn't try to convince you either way.
Right.
And so when I moved to Dearborn 20 years ago, I would see the voter guides in the libraries and use them. But I must admit, I was a person that, you know, kind of left, didn't understand local politics, so I didn't really necessarily always participate in the primaries.
Right.
So, but what I think the days of voter apathy, the tide of voter apathy might be turning, in that, you know, I've always been a voter, but whether or not now I feel the need to share the importance of voting. So I got hooked into the league through the education arm. And when I said, you know, wouldn't it be a good idea to help, you know, new voters figure out the voting system? And I had heard that the League of Women Voters already did that. So I said, oh, perfect. So I joined the league through, and the league partners with Access, and for the last 7 years have gone into every high school in Dearborn and Dearborn Heights and have registered eligible voters. Oh. And the research says that if you start voting earlier, you're more likely to continue voting than beginning to vote as an older person. So that's just a real way to increase civic engagement, which I think is kind of, you know, we all are invested in democracy, whether or not we want to be.
Right.
So we might as well use our voice, use it and use it to our advantage, and not just vote for anything, but be informed voters. And
Impact Fourth Tuesday. Every fourth Tuesday at 1 p.m., meet people who are about making a difference in your community. Our programs are designed to be a catalyst that helps nonprofits and other community organizations get the word out to you and help them to reach their goals and potential in serving others. Listen to Impact every fourth Tuesday at 1 p.m. and see who is making a difference.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio.
Guys and dolls, yeah, we're at the malt shop with Daddy G. And we're going back to the 50s and the 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and head on down to the malt shop where the jukebox is playing. The kids are dancing. And here we are, back in the 50s.
He's a loving man.
Well,